Y'all pissed off.
You know what, man?
Greetings, Shinnel people. We are here. We are live and we are in living color. Let's jump into this week's conversation. Disclaimer, this podcast is not just for gentlemen, but gentlewomen as well. Now that that's out of our way, welcome to A Gentleman's Conversation.
Further ado, it is I, your big homie, the one and only, coming to you with the seductiveness and the realization of opening up your mind and expanding your consciousness.
This is your boy Tony Cathy, aka Mr. Goody Powder. I gotta stop. Okay. I got nothing. It's something I thought about, but he messed me up. So.
Oh, it's my fault. My fault.
He messed me up. Talk to me, Big Homie. What's on your mind this week?
Oh, I've been thinking about a lot of things, but I got one I want to throw at you.
Oh, here we go.
If the world gave you everything you wanted, would you desire more?
How? What? Did you just sit at home? Man, pass me them fire tools right quick. How did you eat if the world gave you everything you desired?
No, wanted.
Everything that I wanted.
Right.
Would I want more?
Would you desire?
Would I desire
more?
It's your question. How do you feel about that? Let me hear your transponder.
Well, it all boils down to satisfaction or greed. Satisfaction would breed the contentment of having that and being okay. Greed would push you for the more aspect of it all.
So are you saying that you would want more or not?
What I'm saying is that everyone's satisfaction differs.
But I'm talking about you.
Me?
I want to know you. Would you want more?
No.
Okay.
Because there would be no need for me to want more if I had everything that I wanted.
Okay.
And that want varies from individuals. You know, what is the basis in our society? We equate wealth, financial freedom, to live one's life in accordance to how you want to, you know, because you have the money now to do so. So if you don't have the money, you have to live your life according to what?
It's a lot of adapting.
Oh, you better believe it is.
Sacrifice.
Yes. And see, these are the things. See, desire and motivation run hand. You can desire more but never get it. You can want more and never have it. But your desire motivates you and pushes you to try and to accomplish. And satisfaction is what allows you to be appreciative to what you have accomplished and what you have.
So you telling me, for whatever reason, whether it be whatever the scenario, you get a windfall, or you do something extremely just incredible for the United States or the world, and you get everything that you want, you are not going to desire more.
No.
So what you've done is you've completely removed the, and you know I'm always going there, you remove the understanding of the next.
The next.
Yeah, because we're always looking for what's next. The next best thing, next most interesting thing. Okay, go ahead.
What drives that? What drives the next?
Human nature.
When you equate human nature and you say the will within an individual to pursue. Now, having what you want, and this encompasses a lot, you know, you have to think about this. I'm expressing the financial stability to go where I want to go, stay where I want to stay, do what I want to do. Now, this in our society, how we live now, is a money thing. That is money. And the enormity of the amount of money that you have grants you this sort of access. See, people will tell you who have money that money can't buy happiness. Well, I've never tried to purchase happiness. I've just tried to eliminate worry. See, because if I can eliminate worry, then happiness would exist.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
See, and you think about it. Everybody that you would speak to, from the guy who works at McDonald's to the guy who works in the factories, from the guy that delivers your milk, the guy that delivers your groceries, and all of these entities that of commerce that intertwine into our society, you think about it. See, I know that everybody can't be wealthy, because if everyone was rich, then no one would be.
Well, I'm gonna have to honestly disagree, because I feel like because of our human nature, we are naturally at a it is our and whatever entity anyone believes in, Buddha, Allah, God, Imhotep, whoever it may be, we have choice. And so I get everything that I want. Am I going to desire more? I feel like I will desire more, because I'm going to want better than what I have. And I'm going to grow bored, or I'm going to grow uninterested in what I have. And so it's going to lead me to a desire to want more. For example, I got everything I want. So now, aesthetically, physically, I have everything that I want. So now what I'm going to do is what I want now, because I'm enjoying all this so much. You get an individual, I don't want to die. So I want immortality. That's not possible. So you're still going to desire more. Or, okay, I've got everything that I want. I have the houses, I have the car, the perfect job. Or if I don't want a job, I'm not working anymore. I'm making money hand over fist. All my family is good. And when we say life, we're not saying a God entity comes down and magically grants you stuff. We just say life. And if you want to go there, what have you, okay, fine. You've given everything that you want. I still feel like there's going to be a gap. There's going to be a space. There's still going to be a void that you want filled, because there's going to be someone that's going to want more than what is capable, because that's in our human nature. Our expectation always outweighs and out transcends our desires.
So,
that's me.
You say that if you had $1 billion.
Copy that.
And this asset of yours grants you accessibility into a life that few could live. we've scaled this down to the individual. You can go and do, you got boats and yachts and houses everywhere. You got land that you've acquired, assets that you own, and you just enjoying every day of your life. And you're saying to me that you are going to want more. And you equate more to not on the you went existential on me. You want more life.
More life, more beauty, more
But we have to sustain ourselves in an understanding that allows us to grapple with every day you wake up can be anywhere in the world you want to be, doing whatever it is you want to do. Now, do you have enough time in your present existence to fulfill all of these things?
No.
See, but
and now you want time. But see, you can't buy that.
See, and that right there is looking at it from a perspective, because the question asked, if life gave you everything you wanted, would you desire more?
And I still say yes, because if life gave me time, even if life gave me immortality, I'm still going to want more, because it is in our human nature.
What nature are you speaking of?
I'm speaking of the nature of satisfaction.
You're speaking of the nature of greed.
That's our human nature.
But see, I love what Michael Douglas did in the movie Wall Street.
Watch yourself.
I love that. Because he said,
so unfair.
He said, greed is good. And do you know what he meant? He meant this: to want more when you have everything is okay. And that is what you're saying to me. To want more when you have everything is okay. It's all right. So how do you satisfy that hunger when there is no other hunger that exists in you? See, you got more money than you will ever need. You have more things than you could ever use. So what is left? What's left
is your imagination.
What's left is the other people who are not there. And your choice of either elevating or devastating lives and existence is equated to the power that you now possess. Because if you really think about it, there are people in the world in which we live in that will never have enough time to spend all that they have. Song that comes to mind, 70s. We're all dust in the wind. And it has a saying in the song that all that you have, no more time can your money buy. You can do this, you can do that, but the eventuality of your existence is still linear. It's going to stop.
I think there's somebody out there. There's several somebodies out there that will still try to, you know, something my mama would say. It's a phrase, and I can't quote it verbatim, but at the end of it, it was perpetuate the fool. And so you get somebody, hey, look, what do you want?
Everything. You'll never be broke again. You'll never have a worry.
But I want a house, boom. But I want this kind of car, okay, boom. I want four of them, different colors, okay, boom. And I want. Let's say they're single, and I want a wife that looks like this and this and this. Okay, here you go. We got 30,
30 women to choose from. What is going on? And, you know, you pick them. Well, I want one of each and blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, fine. Whatever.
My question.
And you go through all these because of our human nature and our human nature to be greedy. Whenever you have whenever you at a point when you have everything that you wanted, you want to know, what is that that I don't have? What is left that I don't have that's going to make me happy? That's going to make me embrace life that much more?
See, you speak from a point of never being satisfied.
And that's what we are. We are those type of beings. I mean, if you, unlike you, because, you know, you are alien.
Thank you, sir.
So.
Thank you.
So you come from a context where, okay, if I got everything I want, I'm good. But I feel like there's, if we were to do a percentage scale of the population, I feel like there's going to be a higher percentage of the population that says, no, I'm still going to want more because I'm going to want this. I'm going to want that.
But the initial question, everything that you want. So if everything covers everything, what is left to want?
That's just it. Because my mind is wanting to tell you everything that I have in that moment. Now, once I've experienced all those things, I'm going to want something new.
So you,
I'm going to want the next.
So you're saying that if you were plucked from the existence that you have now, thrusted into a reality of such that you would contemplate the more?
Yes. I do.
But see, to me, what that tells me is there is no satisfaction in you. When there is no satisfaction, there's always a thirst or a hunger for more.
Because what happens after you're satisfied? What generally happens when you eat and you full and you're done?
I got a word. Go ahead. See, contentment. When you are contented, when you're content, when you are content.
And see, for me, contentment is a state of mind.
See, when you are content, but this same state of mind is contemplating a series of events that favors you. In my mind, I would want to increase others. See, what good is a life that only you can live and not experience it with no one else? See, my aspects of it would be to elevate. And my statement that I made, if everyone was rich, no one would be.
No one would be, exactly.
And my reasoning behind that is this.
Because it's a no one.
I know that people have to work. Why do they have to work? Because our society is built on things occurring. So there's going to have to be people doing something. But what happens when you have a group of people doing things that they want to do and enjoy doing that are beneficial to the society in which we live in? Hello, people, and we're back. Now, check this out. What if you were given some of the things you wanted and the opportunity to work towards the other things you desire to keep you busy? Would that be satisfaction?
Well, let's just be honest. Most people are distracted by an increase of any type of, we'll stop right there. But most people are distracted by an increase. And that
distraction can be good or bad. It can motivate you to keep moving so you'll get more of whatever it is that you have, or you become temporarily satisfied and you are able to go through, do what you want to do. You know, you got a $1 million increase and you're doing a thing, but nothing in your brain tells you, hey, you need to invest. Nothing in your brain tells you, said, hey, you need to go talk to
a financial
advisor so you can put money into a compound interest account. Most people don't do that. They take what they have and they make moves with it. So,
let's see.
So your question again was?
My question was, given some of the things that you desire, that you want, and the opportunity to get more of what you want, and see, you still go back to your fallback. You fall back on the human nature to never be satisfied wherever you are.
Hold on, what was your question again? That second one.
The second question was, first question was everything. The second question was,
if you're given some of the things,
but the opportunity to get more of what you want, you know. And you have to look at it. No one can see past a choice that hasn't been made. And you fall back on the human understanding as being fickled, that most people would acquire something, being that they've never been in a position before, and make decisions based on never being in this arena before, that would not give them the opportunity to do better than where they are, because they've been given this chance to go further, would more or less squander because they've never been, and I'm going to use a word here, taught to be successful. What is success? The measure in which a person looks at one's life through satisfaction and accomplishments towards that satisfaction is the motivation that gives them the desire to push themselves further than where they are. So what is the ultimate goal? That's why the question is such a one to ponder. If you had everything you wanted, and then that desire to want more would be based on what? And you say the inherent human nature.
Yes, every time.
The inherent human nature of not being satisfied with the situation that you have now been put into.
Because Walker, look, you just said this. You said, okay, I'm going to give you some of the things you want. Now, you can get more, but you're going to have to work for it.
Yes.
Now we're talking about, what are those variables? Am I going to have to work 12? Am I going to have to work 8? Am I going to work 5? No. Is it going to be manual? I mean, excuse me. Is it going to be physical labor? Am I sitting at a desk? I mean, what are those variables that, what do you mean by working for it? And that can be a genre.
Well, the work for is your question. The work for is the lack of having the satisfaction that drives you further. Because if everything makes you want more, then having less and wanting more should be an opportunity, if given to you, to prosper in a manner that will elevate you from where you are to where you want to be.
And you know what? I feel like, and no offense, but I feel like you perpetuate your thought process onto the masses. And I feel like it's a level of, for you, is you seeing the, you seeing that the majority is going to, because they have some of what they wanted, will give you half of what you want. You have to work towards the rest. And I feel like, because our generation now, especially, and please, no offense, but you millennials, they have no coping mechanisms and they lack the
old school term of stick-to-itiveness, which pretty much doubles down to two words, willpower. I'm going to give you all of this. Okay, look, baby boy, who's 25, who's 20, 30, we'll say 20 to 30, 30 range. I'm going to give you a car. What car do you want? 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a European sports car or the most expensive SUV you can think of. We're going to tell them, whatever you want, what do you want? That's what they're going to get. Okay, what kind of house do you want? They're going to get a 3,000 square foot house. You know, $1 million house, whatever the case may be. Okay, great. So, now, we're giving you a house. We're giving you a car. What else you want? Well, I want, you know, I want $1 million in the bank. Okay, great. Okay, you got $1 million in the bank. So now we're giving you half of what you wanted. Now you're going to have to work towards what you want. These people, because I want to say something else. I want to say fools, but I'm not going to say that. Well, I did. But nonetheless, they're going to take that half. They're going to see visually. I got a house, I got a Phantom in the driveway, I got the most I got the 2021 Lincoln SUV, I got 300 square foot house, I got $1 million in the bank. I'm good. I don't need to work towards nothing. So they might come to work or might put forth the effort for 6 months, 3 months, whatever, but they're going to continue to dwell on the fact that I'm a millionaire. I got a nice house. But what they will what they will eliminate from their mind is, yes, you have a $1 million home. You have $1 million in the bank. You still got to pay that $1 million house note. You still got to pay for that Phantom that you have, that Aston Martin. You still have to pay for that Ferrari or whatever it is, that $70,000, $100,000 Lincoln, Porsche SUV, whatever. You still have to pay on that. So what you have right now is just only half. You have to complete the whole in order to sustain that. They will not and cannot, and this is just my opinion, no offense to anybody, they cannot or will not fathom the willpower that it takes to sustain those things and keep those in check. So still I say, even if I'm given half and work towards it, now my answer is no, they won't work towards it. They won't work toward it.
So let us recap. Desire.
Wow. See, that's that. See, that's now it's just that psychological. So see, this is what Big Homie does. He sets you up. See, it's always, and please apply this, what I'm about to say, apply this to your life, and this will make you so much smarter than the next 15 individuals. This is always chess, not, Big Homie, please finish it.
Checkers.
It's not checkers.
This is chess.
Because chess requires you to see your victory.
Before
you make your first move. Checkers requires you just to see your move. And not only that, what you got to realize is, in order for you to become crowned a king, you got to make it to the end, and then somebody else has to crown you. And then all you get to do is jump in two directions, and it's always over or backwards. Over or backwards. Whereas chess requires you to move in several different directions using several different other pieces, which requires you to be thinking in several different directions. It's complex.
Never settling for the obvious, but always reaching for what isn't in front of you. See, my thing is, desire without motivation is just a thought. It's just a thought that enters your mind and leaves it. But when you wrap motivation around desire then the will to do comes into play. See, because I know it's going to take effort on my part to accomplish something. So I got to do it. When you equate people and you start doing the demographics on the millennials, the X, the boomers, all of these terms, and you look at the progression of how things were passed along. If you feel entitled to something, and that entitlement is fulfilled to a certain degree, will you have the desire to motivate yourself to do more? Your answer, no. See, so, and you isolate a group of folks.
I did, yes.
And you
I'll take that.
You yes. determined that a certain group of people would not get past a certain point. My analysis of this is on a broader perspective that, yeah, you're right. It is still the understanding of a whole. When you don't have nothing and you're motivated to do something, and you get education, you get skills, you have ideas. All of these things are in the hopes of obtaining more. So when given more, so that you don't have to put forth the effort to get that more, you're saying that you will not be satisfied with that. That's why in our world, in our society, nothing is given to you. You have to work for it all. Success has to be given to you through others who believe that they can make more from you than you can make for yourself and be satisfied with it. That's why we have sports. That's why we have entertainers. That's why we have these whole genre of things.
Wow.
Because your satisfaction in the happiness that you have obtained through your effort has made you secure in what your ability has given you. But your ability has also given someone else a lot more because the opportunity for you to use your ability was granted. And see, you look at these systems that are in place and you say, wow, man, you know, would this be a great place if there was no more poverty?
Of course.
Would this be a great place if there was no more homelessness?
Right.
Of course. Would we have the type world living in that we would desire to be a part of, this human community, if we eradicated things that the human diaspora, you know, this understanding that we want, this reality that we all strive for to have, would it be possible?
Right.
My thing is this. We will never always get what we want. We will always desire to have more. But can you be content with the effort you put forth to live your best life that you've been given an opportunity to live?
Big homie, how you feeling, baby?
Oh, man.
So your summer's almost over with, man. How's your summer been?
It has been one of discovery. We're still in the midst of things that are going on.
Oh, right on, COVID-19.
Yes, and normality has taken on a different perspective. You know, what I was accustomed to doing in the summer had to be modified. Right, and right. There have been certain aspects of that modification that at times have been a little difficult, but right. Well worth the understanding of the overall.
And you've had the vaccine, right?
Yes, I have.
Talk to me about that.
I,
just a little bit. So you had no prejudices?
None. I had the Moderna. vaccine. My understanding may be different from a lot of folks because people have their own sentiments when it comes to this and their own prejudices right. when it comes to this. I just know that in the 70s, I received a vaccination shot in my arm. It was a multi-prong shot with, I think, 13 needles that they injected different things into my body to ward off, fight against, and protect.
So in the 70s, what was that shot for? Do you remember?
It had a lot to do with like chickenpox, whooping cough, polio, right, a whole lot right, of different
right,
things.
Right.
And I didn't know if there was any side effects. I didn't know how much efficacy was in these medicines they gave me. Right. I just know it was something that we had to do when it came to eradicating the spread of these different diseases that were crippling and killing folks. So, you know, we all on a massive level participated in this endeavor. Now, like I said, people have their reservations when it comes to this new epidemic that we are facing in this country, this pandemic, as it has pertaining to a worldwide involvement and how folks' perception on their rights as individuals and the rights of other individuals connecting with one another and their decisions concerning this matter.
Because I think that, and I definitely feel you on that. But I've been talking with several individuals, and I'm not vaccinated, not yet. But I've been talking with several individuals, and what I found out is that some of the concerns are legit. Some things that I haven't even thought about. I have a friend of mine who has a daughter who's in college, and she's going to take the vaccination. But one of her prejudices was, she was like, "Daddy, there hasn't been any statements made by any of the entities that have the knowledge to explain and express what the effects are of the different, because it's Moderna, the Johnson & Johnson, and
Pfizer.
And she said, "I want to have kids, so I don't know what this is going to do." And I said, "That makes sense." And then another individual said that, "Well, I have pre-existing issues already. How will that affect me?" And then there were several, but this one, those two stood out. And then this last one stood out. Someone said this, and it was very impacting. "It's not a cure. So my chances of getting the virus doesn't change if it's not a cure. If I take a flu shot, I don't get the flu. If I take the shot for polio, if I take the shot for meningitis, the shot for the mumps, whatever the case may be, all those shots that are given, those shots keep me away. If I step on a rusty nail, I can go get a shot, a tetanus shot, to keep me from getting," and this is an individual sharing this with me, "to keep me from getting any types of effects from a rusty nail that would render me infected. So with this vaccine, it is not a cure. I can still get it. Not only that, can I get it, but if I have it, I can still spread it to somebody else." Now, they understood that if I do get it with the shot, it helps to fight. But then they said this, "I have relatives and friends that have had the vaccine, gotten COVID-19. And died."
Now that part I haven't heard about anyone who had been vaccinated. And I'm not saying that that right there is not an impossibility.
Yeah, because there's always variables, right?
I'm not saying that it's not an impossibility.
Right.
What I am saying is that when you look at how evasive this particular disease that is going on now,
right,
and the variances that are cropping up as a result of it, and a line of defense is better than no defense at all.
Copy that.
You get a flu shot, and it doesn't mean you won't catch the flu.
Right.
It means that if that particular flu strain affects you, that you got a shot for, then your symptoms won't be as severe. Now, understand what I mean by particular strain. You can get a flu shot and another strain can get you just as sick, like you never got the shot at all.
Right.
See, but it's something that people do on the regular, and people want, and I thought about it. People want more information. And I said, why? Why is it like this? And then it dawned on me that every time you see drugs being put on the television, which didn't exist years ago, they always give you possible side effects. What could happen, what could happen, and what you need to do as a result of. So this is what people are looking at. What are the possible side effects to this? And then at the same time, the disease is still communicable, meaning you can catch it, you can give it to others. The severity of it, being vaccinated and unvaccinated, is a stark difference.
All right. Right.
Now, I mean, you're going to get sick, but you won't be as sick. Your chances of recouping is a lot greater. Okay, so you weigh that out, and then you look at a broader picture. How many people have succumbed to this disease and died? There was no vaccine. There was nothing available for you to take. You caught it and you died. And then you think, okay, they are working, because our technology is a lot better than what it was. The ability to do things are a lot better than what it was. And so they're coming up and they're saying, well, look, this is what we're doing. People's complaint is, if you can put this much effort into a disease that's killing folks, then why can't you wipe out cancer?
Okay.
And why can't you fix the fact that folks who are diabetic have to keep doing this and keep doing that, and folks who are asthmatic have to keep taking this and taking that. And then you have to weigh these things against how many people have died as a result of. And you say, well, the urgency of us doing this and having something based on how many people have perished as a result of us not having anything at all, put us in a we got to do something mode. We have to provide people with something that can help them get past this thing that is out there affecting all of us. And see, the connectivity of us being one society is the results of how this thing is spreading. See, your right not to be vaccinated is yours, but do you have a right as an unvaccinated person to contaminate another person that may or may not be vaccinated?
That is definitely something that's going to be,
see,
I feel like it's going to be decided for us real soon. And with that, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
So,
hold on, wait a minute. Ice or no ice?
Ice.
1, 2, 3. Just a cube?
Just give me a cube or two.
Oh, we got to get rid of a couple of those. My bad.
It's all good. Yeah, that'll work.
Let me go. So, man, you know, I remember remember the time we was talking a while back, and I gotta go back to this. The statement, because I've always wanted to ask you this. The statement that you made, we were it was the written thing that had gone down, right? And I got suspended from work. You remember that?
Yes.
Right. And so I remember you saying something. We was just talking about life in general. And you was just sharing some things that you had gone through and different things you had experienced. But there was a statement you made. You said, guilt is for suckers.
That is correct. It is.
So, in a compact way, run that, because I know what my understanding is. Well, what brought you to that, and then explain that statement.
Well, what I mean by guilt is for suckers is that if you're going to do something and then feel bad after you've done it,
right?
You shouldn't have did it to begin with. You should never do something and then feel bad about it. If you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, then don't do it. But to feel guilty for doing something that you didn't have to do, I don't get that. I don't understand that. And, you know, a lot of people will sit back and want to say, you know, you don't have a conscience. And I would reply to that is your conscience should have stopped you from the start. Why would you nullify your conscience and then do something and then bring it to the forefront and feel bad about it? That is the stupidest. That makes no sense to me.
So how old were you? I mean, it's not like you stole a dollar or something from your grandmama or, you know, a piece of candy from the candy store. I mean, at what point were you?
Well, here is,
you got this clarity.
I tell you, and
I mean, real talk.
Real talk. I got caught doing the nasty at a young age.
In your mama's, your daddy's?
In my parents' house.
Was you in your parents' bedroom?
Yeah, no. I was not. I was not that stressed out mentally to accommodate myself in such a manner.
Who caught you, your mom, your pop?
My pops caught me and said, you know better than this, not to be doing this. And in my mind, I was thinking, I don't care.
You was thinking what?
I don't care.
How old were you, man?
I was about 14. I'm like, I don't care.
Now, this is what I want to know. How old was the girl?
She's about 17 or 18. I'm smashing. And it was like, you know, he was talking to me like I should feel bad for what I'd done, but the sensation of what I was doing had me feeling so great that I'd surmise that guilt is just for suckers.
Okay, so man, this going back, going back in this moment right quick, in the time machine, you know, zap, you know, you can't see you because it's going to mess up the space-time continuum.
You're talking about yourself. That paradox.
Yeah, you can't see yourself in the past when you show up, you know. So you sit there, you're doing your thing, and your pop comes in.
Mid-stroke. I'm mid-stroke.
So is he like, young lady, get your clothes on?
No. No, he is like, I'm going to need to see you. And then he walked out.
Oh, so he gave time. Did you finish or did you stop?
Oh, no, it was over.
Oh, okay.
There wasn't no finishing, Doc. Because momentum and parents' discovery kills all of everything.
If I mean, you got any understanding and respect for your parents, dude, like that, that's
situation that died right there on the spot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she was probably scared to death.
Anyway. My heart beating, and I'm like, you know, I'm mad because he done messed me up from reaching ultimate. See, because I got a little attitude about this. You know, if he'd have caught me afterwards, then it would probably have been a whole...
Oh, but he caught you doing the trick.
Huh? Yes. Yes. I was in the hunt for Red October. Believe that.
Trying to go deep.
Man, who? And so he has this long spiel, you know. I don't need you to be doing this in my house. You know, you need to find you somewhere. I know you ain't got no monies to do this, but you can't be doing this in my house.
Right, right.
You know, you got brothers and sisters, and if I don't get you, then they gonna feel like they can do this in my house.
Oh, so, right, 'cause you the oldest
one. Yeah, so I gotta stop you and make an example out of you.
Oh, yes.
So that they don't make this mistake that you have made. So, I mean, you know, do what you gotta do, but I'm still gonna get some. I don't care what you, I done got it wet, and I don't want it dry no more. So I'm gonna make it happen. So, you know, we had a thing and he didn't whoop me or nothing, but he put me on punishment, man. I couldn't go nowhere. I couldn't do nothing. And you know, all of that for an extended period of time, Doc. So it wasn't like no week or two.
Oh yeah, he was.
No, Doc, let me break it down to you because I didn't give you the whole run. This was summertime action.
Oh, yeah, Pop, so you were shut down.
See, yeah.
You shut down, bro.
Yes.
They was looking for you, wondering where's Kevin. Was your boys coming by the house? Can Kevin come out?
No. No, he can't. No.
Yo.
And this is like he equipped the informers. You let me know if your brother go out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, so the informers is like, oh, we got him now. You know, he on lockdown.
Yeah,
so
make
you know,
your move. Right, make your move if you
now,
want to.
Now, being the guy that I am, I'm thinking, since I'm in this fortress of solitude because of an indiscretion that I don't feel guilty about, I got to do something to rectify this. Now, I didn't stay on it a long time. He got me for about a month.
Dude, 30 days in the summer?
Yeah, he got me for a month.
Off of the block? Dog, he got that's me like for a month. Year. That's like 6 months.
I know.
You know, it's a lot going on in the hood.
But he was talking whole summer.
Wow.
So what I did was, you know how you get early parole for good behavior?
Copy that.
So, you know, his house stayed clean because I was in the house. His food was cooked.
Right.
And everything was done. That you know, and I was in my room. Check this out now. I do everything, then I go upstairs, I warm my room, and I shut my door, right? You got all your stuff down. I don't want to be bothered with none of y'all. Since I can't go nowhere, I done did all of this. Everything is clean, dishes clean, clothes washed. I don't care. Just leave me alone. I'm going upstairs in my room. Shut the door. I don't want to watch no TV. I don't want to do nothing. I'll read a book. So, you know, like, he pops in on me, you know, after 30, you know, I'm going to parole you, you know, because you have been, you know, I can't complain about nothing. Everything is straight. You've been doing what you're supposed to do, you know, been doing a lot more, you know, because your brothers done told me, they ain't had to do nothing. Y'all didn't want them in the house. See, if I do everything, then I can be by myself. I ain't got to worry about them. Y'all just gone play, gone by. I don't care. Don't kill yourself. That's all I, you know. So, but I learned some things, you know, and I know now that I'm grown and been grown for a while that my actions were totally disrespectful. Totally. But I did not at the time feel bad because I was in the throes of getting it on. So, you know, I've grown. And I realized that with my children, I would have had to afford them the same understanding had that occurred that I got. See, I'm not gonna beat you. I'm not gonna put you out. but I'm gonna get you. Now, now, if you work your sentence, it can be commuted. But if you don't do nothing to show me, because see, I did all of this. I was remorseful, in a sense, because I did a lot of stuff to try to show, look, you know, actually, I just wanted to get the hell out and go outside, really. And I'm just trying to see if I can appease him to the point of letting me off the hook so I can go.
You know what? I got it when I had children myself. But if you do it right, your child will want to be whooped. Want you to take that switch, well, that belt, whatever, versus being put on punch.
I know it.
Mama, look, no, Pops, just go ahead and whoop.
Because it's an over with thing.
Don't put me on punch. Just go ahead, just go. Doc, when I understood that, I remember my girls got in a fight with each other. All I heard was thumpity thump 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 thump. I come upstairs and they all over the place. I don't remember what they were fighting about.
I'm sure.
I was so pissed.
I know.
And so I put them on punishment. And I don't think it was so much as them being on punishment. It was the fact that they realized I won't be able to communicate and connect with my sister anymore. And when I realized that, that's when the severity of the punishment became that much more heavy on them. And I was like, okay, I got you. But I later learned, up 10 years later, we sitting there around, you know, of course, they're high school age, Bria's in college. And we sitting there rapping, and they tell me how they were sliding notes to each other under the
like
door.
Like prisoners.
Go to the past.
Like prisoners. Yes. Like
they would wait. Not. They would wait to hear my footsteps go down the hall, wait for me to leave. And I ain't gonna lie. I know their mama was slacking. That's one thing I could say. I will say, I don't have anything to say about being, you know, married. The worst thing is not being able to read minds. That's the only thing about marriage I would say that is bad. I can't read minds. If I could read a mind, I'd be off the chain.
Oh my God.
But other than that, I enjoyed being married. And that's a totally different conversation.
Right.
But one thing I loved is that their mom knew when to break my rules. But I also knew when to break hers.
Right.
Now, it was an unspoken thing. You didn't say anything about it or what have you. But them little Negroes started exposing us when they got older. They were like, Daddy, you remember when you brought us ice cream? My mama put us on. No, nigga. My mama, you remember when you let us out the room? When that? Oh, you did what?
See. I'm gonna tell you what that boils down to in an understanding. The severity of the punishment must fit the crime.
It's gotta fit the crime.
So my wife would say that's too severe.
No. Yeah, I'm talking about I put you on punishment for 2 months.
See, she would say, okay, all right, I think it's been long enough.
It's not my problem.
See, I don't want to create hostilities with her. I'm pissed.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. Yeah, I created some scenarios. I created some scenarios myself.
Hey, man. You know, I be sitting sometimes and I be thinking, you know, wondering about different things.
There you go. Thinking again.
Yeah, it's occupational hazard, you know. this thing called thinking. And a thought ran across my mind, and I want to share it with you. Why do women love...
Hold on.
See?
Here we go.
See?
I got to pace myself.
I know you do.
Because anytime you start bringing in something about the level of women and their thinking, you gotta adjust your momentum, because if you come in too fast,
Oh, you gonna crash.
You gonna crash. Oh, and yeah, if you come in too slow, you gonna miss your mark.
Oh, totally.
So anytime we start talking about these sisters, okay, let me take a beat. All right. Go ahead, big homie.
Why do women love differently than men?
Okay, that's pressure, but I'm gonna lead in with this one. And please understand, ladies, gentlemen, and gentlemen, that this is purely based off of opinion and just the life experiences that we have, in hopes that it entertains your thought process. And maybe we both can marinate for a minute and then come out as something tasty. Can you dig it? But I feel like women love differently because, one, regardless of what higher power that you begin, that you believe in, I feel that women by nature are creatures of love, the hearthstone. And if you know anything about buildings, and what you hear in the background is natural rain. That's not anything that we are improvising. That's natural rain. We've opened the doors and the windows so that we can get that, because we feel like that would enhance the conversation experience. But a hearthstone is that part of the stone that is the center block of the building that was built. If you remove that hearthstone, if you was able to remove that structurally sound, that edifice, that building would be compromised. It's the strength of it. And I believe that women are the strength of humanity. And I believe that by not only by nature, by spirituality, but also by culture, that they are bred different, they are taught different. That word maternal instinct means something. And so that automatically puts them on a level of loving differently. My grandmother loved so hard that I feel like she enabled a lot of my relatives, but she also empowered them. But the thing was, is that love was consistently. Whereas my grandfather, it was matter of fact, in your face, kill or be killed, ride or die, black or white. And he was a man's man. Big homie.
Love. I pose that question because if it is to be universal, then the understanding of it has to have a universal appeal to it. I look at how we are raised. You teach your daughters to be nurturers. You buy them dolls. You teach them the etiquettes and the refinements of being a lady. And a man is taught the opposite. He's taught how to suppress his feelings, how to endure pain, how to overcome his pain.
Don't be a punk.
So that Don't he cry. Can keep it moving.
Don't be weak.
Now, and then we get with someone, see, and we have to express something that we've never expressed before. We have to tell another individual, a female, that we have feelings and express those feelings in a manner that is conducive to her understanding of what these feelings are. And we find ourselves in a precarious state. See, love is universal. It is not bound by being a woman or being a man. It is bound by an understanding that we have towards one another that we're willing to share. Some people are selfish with their love. They only want it, but they don't want to give it. Some people are giving with their love. They want to give it in the hopes of receiving it. These things beg one commonality, understanding. Because if I love you, then why won't you love me back? And is the manner of love in which you're giving me enough? See, we put ourselves in these situations, men and women, and we express these thoughts that we have concerning love. You know, what we'll do, what we won't do for love. You know, they even had songs about it. You know, what you won't do, you do for love. You know, I've tried everything, but I won't give up. In this world, only you make me do for love what I would not do. These type things, see, is finding yourself accepting stuff that you would not accept, dealing with things that you would not deal with, all under the guise of love. And see, you have to say, because it has been determined, and this is my opinion, that when you love yourself and you have an expectation of the love you want for yourself based on the love you have for you, that you would not settle for anything less. But what is less? The degree of love that you find unacceptable? So, I pose a question. If I showed you I loved you, but never told you, would that be enough? If I told you I love you, but never showed you, would you accept it?
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, on the feminine plane, if I told you I love you and never sold you, that's going to be unacceptable. Because no matter what comes out your mouth, a real woman and not a played woman will have to see what you say. I'm going to say that again. She will have to see what you say. Baby, I'm going to paint the house this weekend. I'm off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Come Monday, this shit's going to be done. Now, why? Because I'm your man's, I love you, and you got my word. And I'm going to tell you right now, come Sunday, I don't care if it's midnight, I don't care if it's 1 a.m. or 1. Nigga, if your last paint stroke ain't on that house, and when she get up in the morning, or whether she coming from out of town from a business trip, whatever the case may be, that house ain't painted, you better have a damn good reason, because she has to see what you say. And that's another reason why they love different, because one thing a woman is good at, she will redirect her, and forgive me for this word because it's not real, she will redirect her lovability. If you ain't doing it, she will redirect it. But you know what? He loves his kids. He treats them very well. She will refocus her love on the fact that that's what you do. But that is only at the expense of a time limit.
My question still poses a stark reality that love has expectations.
Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes.
Fulfilling those expectations, some of us are equipped to do, and some of us are equipped not to do. But to use a term, unconditionally. See, an unconditional love has no expectations of what you do, but I will maintain what I do. That's hard right there, see, because human nature says that if you mistreat me, I don't see why I need to love you.
Right on.
If you are doing me wrong, why should I invest in you? See, this thing of unconditional, if you really was to break it down, has conditions. See, unconditionally has conditions. And it is a precarious thing when you think about how we approach each other as human beings, how our expectation of love and what we desire, what we hope for, and what we expect. See, I think it becomes one-sided when you place your hopes in someone but have no hopes in yourself. I think it becomes one-sided when you expect it but refuse to give it. I think it becomes off-kilter or has no balance in it when both parties cannot see it on an equal plane. Love becomes universal when those who are involved feel it, give it, expect it, and receive it, and have the willingness to enjoy it. See, these things right here are the dynamics that we try to work out in what we call relations or a relationship. We try to project that which we want and expect for ourselves in others. If I love you, then why is it hard for you to love me? Mm. If I'm there for you, then why can't you be there for me?
So going back to your original question, why do women love differently than men?
Is it inherited? Is it taught? Is it natural?
I think it's all the above, because I think if you got a grandmother that you saw show love to your grandmother, to your grandfather, if you saw her fix his plate every time, that's a level of respect and love. That's not submissiveness. It is on a level, but it's not like...
It's not dominance.
Right, it's not dominance. If you saw her clean his clothes and prepare his clothes for work, one, the brother's going to work.
Right.
So she's got his clothes ready. You saw him get dressed, and before he leave, he grabs his lunchbox, which she's prepared. And right. If he gives her a kiss, an adoration kiss, and leaves for work, and he comes back, and you see that innately adapts to you. You can't get away from that. Now, should you choose to ignore that, it's on you, or should you choose to embrace it? But you see that, and you see the conversations that they had. You can never say that I never saw my grandma, my granddaddy argue. Now, they've been in heated debates, but he never cussed her. She never cussed him. You know, whether it be about politics, religion, family, friends, whatever.
So, can love exist without respect?
No. I don't think so. I don't think that. You know what? Well, hold on, wait. Damn.
Talk to me now.
Because I can still have a love for someone.
Uh-huh.
Family, friend.
Right.
Or lover. And not want them to be around. I can care about them and love them, but I can't fool with them no more.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
So, okay. Intimacy love is different than general love.
Oh my yes.
See.
Oh my yes.
See, intimacy love is the interconnection that we have that is surpassing the general love that we may show towards others. Our affections fall under a different understanding. See, and this is that man and woman thing, you know, that we try to work out. The semantics of, am I giving you too much and accepting far less? Are you giving not enough and I'm still wanting more?
And that happens, yes. That's the real.
And see, these things here, see, the dynamics behind it is that we want love to have an equality. See, that equality allows us to be forthgiving in it. See, it's easy to love someone that's willing to love you back. You see the results of your love because you know that the effort you put into showing it to that individual, they put that effort into showing you back. And you work at it and you develop it and you understand it, and it allows you and that person to move as one. See, and what most of us experience is a one-sided love where we feel we're giving more but receiving less, and we keep questioning why.
Okay, so, because this is a topic that women can ride out on a regular basis.
No doubt. Yeah. I believe that there are a lot of women who find themselves loving men who do not give them the same amount of love back. Exactly. And then it goes to this. They don't give you the same amount of respect, because when you look at your love and you look at your respect, they are intertwined with one another. And if you cannot have them on the same plane, if you cannot have the scales balanced out, then the inequality of it causes the individual to question, you know. And a lot of times, people do something that I find remarkable, and that is, how do you show love to someone else but not have love for yourself?
And that happens on a regular basis.
And see, that basis is an inequality from the start. That's just I mean, I'm saying, okay, we get out there, young men, you meet ladies, you find a commonality or an attractiveness for this individual, you hook up, you want to see if y'all possess compatibility, and then you see one person willing to give more than the next. I mean, most folks think that if I hang in there, if I love them just a little bit more, a little bit harder, then they'll get it. And I'm trying to understand, how can they get something that they can't show from the start that they're going to develop later on because they've experienced it from you?
And then that, what that does is that brings us to, we've dipped into the understanding of why women love differently. It's taught, it is maternal, and it is nature. But then that brings us to, with your last statement, why do men love differently?
What is a man's love? Can you accept that? I mean,
but that's based off of, and then the variables for a man is different, because that is a strong, and for me, and this is my opinion, I feel like a woman naturally, instinctively will love different. But for a man, I feel like his love is based a large percentage off of what he has seen, what he's been represented, what's been represented to him as love. So if he's seen his father and his grandfather be men of good heartedness.
Are you talking about integrity?
Yes, integrity, but intimacy, passion. If he's seen them kiss their mom, kiss their grandmother, or things of that nature, and never raise their voice at them or tell him, hey, boy, I won't ever see you hit your female cousins like that again. Don't put your hands on no woman unless they're trying to kill you. You know, I mean, in anything of that nature, if they see that, then that's different. I don't think it's a natural maternal instinct for us, because I feel like because of the way that we've been brought up, and especially it definitely depends on your nationality, because if you are black, and we're not going to get deep, that's a different podcast, but the variables in play, we've been taught to be that dude, that cat, don't be soft, don't show your feelings, represent what you mean by what you do, and what have you. And then that goes back to how you was raised, what you saw, what you have experienced too. We love different baseball, clearly, in my opinion, based off of what we've seen and what we have been taught visually, verbally, and emotionally.
So we have to get past that love is weak. And that love requires a weakness that a lot of men don't know how to have or choose not to be. See, love can't be equated into weakness. Love has to be looked at as strength. In the strength of loving, a man does, what does he do? He provides for his wife. He provides for the situation. He takes care of business. See, we look at it differently based on when we were born and how we were raised. See, because if you say the millennials aspects of love differs from the boomers or the Xers. See, and we break them off in that era because we look at how we were taught. See, when you say seen your mom or your grandparents, seen your grandfather or your father, what happens when these elements do not exist, but the requirements of love still do? If you didn't see it, does this excuse you? If you've never been a part of a situation, do you get a pass? Do you get this understanding that because you've never witnessed this and you've never been a part of it, that your understanding of love differs to the point to where how you give it should be accepted? See, compatibility is the realization that what we have, we both want.
Okay.
Incompatible is the understanding that we are not those people who can journey together. We can't go. And what I see is that a lot of incompatible people try to make a compatible situation and wrap it around love, and it's one-sided, it's divided, and it's always a mess. See, and what we don't do, and I'm not going to say that all millennials are this way. I'm just going to say that people varies between age brackets of not understanding what love is therefore not capable of showing what love should be. And we try to learn this thing that we do not know, as we have been throughout the history of our existence. Something we don't know, we try to learn, and we put forth an effort, and we look at examples. And I'll give you, for instance, you and your friends hang out. Y'all been road dogs, y'all been chilling. Y'all go out, y'all hit the scene, y'all handle y'all business. Now, you done met somebody.
Right.
That somebody changes your perspective, and you willing to do for this individual something you have never been willing to do for no one. Redirect your time, redirect your purpose, redirect your understanding, and then you get called out. Man, that girl got you whipped. She playing with you, dog. She got you all twisted up inside and running back to her every time she opened up her mouth, you gone. You didn't used to be weak like that, man. And why do men look at love who haven't experienced it as a weakness? These things, gentle people, ladies, are questions that we ask when we're trying to find the universal thing that we all want, and that's understanding. Because if we can find someone to understand us and love us for who we are, as we love them for who they are, and build on the respect and love that we have developed for each other in trying to have the happiness we deserve by while being with one another, is the challenge. Remember this. Love has never been easy. It has always been a challenge. It has been something that we struggle with in and out. But our willingness to find ourselves a part of it keeps us wanting to try it with different individuals, hoping that we can find that one individual that we connect with, that one person that sees us who we are as we see them, so that we can share the realities of an understanding that can bring us the happiness we both desire.